Yes, absolutely. Yeah, completely, completely. Well, they all do it,
they're
right?
Crazy.
They all do it. I mean, you know, I mean, actually, the Coca-Cola thing is absolutely fascinating because Coca-Cola created Santa Claus. You know, actually, the crossover there is extraordinary. The earlier images of Santa Claus, St. Nicholas, have him dressed in. He's a forest god. He's a mischievous figure out of the forest. Coca-Cola rebrands him by dressing him in red, the colours of Coca-Cola. And now all over the world, if people think of Santa Claus, he's actually wearing the livery of Coca-Cola. He's got away from it. It's become an aspect of the collective imagination. Now, in a way, the difference really between the world that has now been created and that older world is that in the older world, actually, because people did live in villages and kind of in some ways they had to make their own fun. Right, so they had to draw on the local traditions of understanding the world, combination of religious tradition, oral history, folk tradition. So if you weren't gonna, in the long winter nights, if you weren't going to be tremendously bored, you had to work out ways of spending time. So you play music, you sing songs, you tell stories. And in that, and in order for that to happen, there have to be people who remember stories, who know how to tell them, who learn to play musical instruments, who learn songs, and in that process make them their own. You know, so it's a sort of it's a more active world, a world where the source of inspiration, these stories, these images, are closer up to your daily life. And now they're beamed in, you know, from satellites in TV sets or computers. So they come from an unknown source that is much further away from us than our daily lives. And the principal direction of this really is to keep us buying things. So as to make us passive consumers rather than people who are active in our own lives in other ways. Now, what you see with Karl Marx right at the beginning is the necessity for the proletariat or the people to own the means of production. Now, in a similar kind of way, we somehow need to own the means of production of our own imagination, because in a way that also has, at the time he was speaking, that wasn't colonized. What was being colonized was people's labor. What was it, you know, what Karl Marx beautifully, powerfully saw was that human labor used to contribute much more directly to the success or failure of people's lives. Because, you know, if your labor is about you growing stuff in your own field and kind of taking the bounty of that old so that you're fed through the winter, there's a direct relationship between your labor, what comes out of your field, and what you get back. In this new world of labor, what happens is your labor is directed principally to creating profit for the man who owns the means of production, and you get comparatively much less of that. And with the rise of capitalism, the rise of the people who invest their capital in the means of production, and therefore need to take the lion's share of the result of people's labour, increasingly the balance is tipped towards a centralist kind of image where the real power, the real activity, is outside the other person and away from them. Now, as that has developed over time, that's absolutely also happened to our imaginations. People's imaginations are discouraged. They're discouraged also from having access to traditions that support that imagination. So old stories, old ideas, old songs start to fade away in favour of new songs, new stories, new ideas that somehow support the prevailing zeitgeist that is about the creativity being elsewhere. The creativity being polished in a particular way, produced often in ways that and presented in ways that generally ordinary people can't produce to the same standard. So what happens in that is a massive colonization of the human soul. So we create a culture and a system that is really about dispossessing people from their own cultural roots, their own creativity, their own life energy, allowing it to a degree, as long as it feels trivial. And so, in some ways, interestingly, as capitalism develops, art and things being quite valued, but as the projects of the privileged. And you see the rise of the image of the artist as the unworldly figure who is a special person with special abilities that can produce things that in the end make a lot of money, because actually the whole idea of capitalism is that everything relates to profit. A profit is seen as the result of society. And then that profit can be ploughed back into society, so you get the Victorian philanthropists who give back some, but not all, of the wealth that they've accumulated for owning the means of production. And then, so when we come to study a subject, it's in a way that, you know, the personal and the political have inevitably intermeshed, right? So in a certain way, looking at the imagination is a political act. Has to be. Because if we start to take it seriously, if we start to take vision seriously, we then have to look at the life that we live and the lives other people live. Because the ultimately these traditions, and why we have to look at these older traditions, and see what do they have to say to us, is they speak of a different vision of the world. They speak of a vision of the world where the creativity is situated in all of us, and all our individual creativity is needed. So as we sit and look at our world, we look at our work, we look at our personal life, we look at our friends, what is needed, what is important, is that we can bridge between our outer experience, as we did in the meditation, and touch our inner experience, and touch that place inside ourselves that the Welsh bards would have called the head of Bendigi Vren, the singing head, the head that prophesies and speaks. Now, the head that prophesies is this source of creativity that sees vision, that sees possibilities, that maybe sees a different kind of world, and that world and that vision connected through our body and senses and our relationships is not separate then from the world. So that vision has to inevitably then meets the outside world. And this interesting word they use, pen, meaning a head or a chieftain. So it calls on ourselves to be chieftains in our worlds. It calls on us to recognize the centrality of our own world, of ourselves in our own world. And so the point, in a way, of studying or leaning into these older traditions is so that we connect up to this older way of doing things that has got lost through the industrial process and through the development of capitalism. It isn't a simple process, because if we look at what happens to the Communist Manifesto, which is an extraordinary vision, really, of liberation. It's if you've not read it, read it. It's a beautiful document. But somehow, because of the cultural forces going around, because of how it was picked up and what happens to it, it becomes the inspiration behind totalitarianism, where the state, where you get, instead of the means of production, really, and labour being really owned by the people, you get this image of the proletariat, this great image that you find in Eastern Europe, and this dictatorship, terrible image of the dictatorship of the proletariat, and the image of the communist state and the communist party as the vehicle and the vessels of the will of the proletariat. And they create a hell on earth in that process. And they do it in a different way, but in a similar style to the way we see capitalism develop, because, again, individual people become meaningless. Again, power centralizes. Totally different system, totally different structure of doing it, but same thing happens. Power centralizes, creativity centralizes. It's away from the immediate person. Now, even practically, this is just to come back to the point that Ben and Ali mentioned about, well, why don't I do this more often, this meditation, why don't I do this more often? Well, the reason why you don't do this more often, one of the reasons why you don't do this more often, is you've been trained not to. Mm-hmm. You've been trained, you've been shown over and over and over again that actually, that this is not an useful place to go. You've been told over and over that the real energy is somewhere else, the real creativity is somewhere else. Or in order to get that, I have to become something else. Now, what this fragment of the story of Bendigeidvran says is that actually, no, all you do is you become the bridge. The body is the bridge. And if you allow yourself to bridge in this way, you come into contact with something the Celts called the head, the pen, the source, the origin. And if you do that, then something else happens. In the Bendigeidvran story, a whole world gets destroyed. First of all, there's terrible destruction, and then the seeds of a new world start to appear. And it's literally true in some ways that actually if you do that, your whole worldview will vanish. A whole world will get destroyed. And the seeds of a new world will appear. In the story of Brown the Blessed, in this battle, he himself is wounded and dies, and his head is cut off. So he's left. So everything vanishes but the head. And then there is this magic. He and seven companions are left go to a magical hall where they gradually recreate the world by telling stories. And so literally what happens, if we really let ourselves engage with this, is our world ends. The world that we know ends. That is, we go into the dark and our world ends. But in that process, what we're left with, everything vanishes, but the head and the seven companions. And what's called the entertainment of the noble head, or the storytelling, or the prophesying capacity of the noble head, in this enclosed space, tells new stories, creates new energies, until a door is opened onto the land. And then that newness floods out and starts to seed itself, starts to create a new world, starts to set things right. Now, in a way, that's really literally what happens when we pay attention in this way and sustain that attention. Everything gets reorganized from the inside. We do have to go into the dark. We do have to go into the mystery. We do have to let go of a lot of what we think and feel and know. What also happens if we let ourselves be there is we start to hear the whispering and the stories and the impressions of the head that sits at the center of our being that is continually prophesying to us. And if we listen to that enough, at a certain point, that energy flows back outwards with us and starts to change the world, starts to create the seeds of a new world. It's not an easy process. I mean, the story is quite graphic, really. You know, so what happens to Guru Brahm the Blessed is he, in a way, lays himself down between two shores and links things together. And in a certain way, the battle happens in his body. The two worlds meet in his body. And that's literally what happens. As we link together the inside and the outside, as we let ourselves surrender into the deeper places, there is a war that happens because of all the places that we know don't want to die. They want to stay as they are. They want to keep on our creativity, in a way, has been, which is always with us, has already been diverted into creating a world that doesn't want to die. That wants to stay the same. And so as the new energies and the older energies meet together, there is struggle, there is difficulty, there is a... And so we have to keep on coming back into the place of trusting the body, trusting the breath, trusting the senses, trusting the deep process. And at a certain point, what happens is that the war stops because the old energies have lost their hold. And then we sink into the stillness, we sink into the place of the noble head. Now, this is not a linear process. It happens moment by moment, actually. But what we have to find a way to do, and it's why we gather in places like this, is to create conditions that help the new energies have the time and the encouragement to stay present enough to embody. Because generally speaking, when we're in the midst of life, we're in the midst of a whole set of processes that are trying to pull us out of ourselves, to keep telling us that actually the creativity in you, the head that is in the heart of you, isn't a real head. It literally says, we'll put somebody else's head on there. Follow Nigel Farage. And if that's the case, then Nigel Farage's head is the head that's inside you, or David Cameron, or Miliband, or the man whose name I can never remember. Or it doesn't have to be political, right? It can be a religious figure, or it can be, you know, it could be the Pope. You know, it could, you know, it, or it could be our image of what a Jew it is. Or, you know, it could be the Buddha, you know, it could be whatever. But actually the key thing here is to trust the head that we find at the centre of our own experience when we do this apparently simple act, coming into our senses and letting ourselves go in and down.